Jason, and as always, I'm here with Gabe. How are you doing, sir?
I'm great, Jason. How are you?
I am cold.
You may be cold, but I guarantee you, you're not as cold as Weston. Did he get waterboarded?
I'm definitely
not wet. Is that
basically
what's happened here?
It definitely sounds like it.
Oh my gosh. I know I'm kind of just jumping right in here, but
please.
Goodness.
Yeah, it definitely feels torturous when obviously for the Harasa, they don't see it as torturous. They're just, you said dunk them with cold water.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we're just to reset real quick. We're chapter 20 out of the Silent Planet. And we're in the great trial, right, with Oyarsa and Ransom and Weston and Divine. And Oyarsa has sent Weston away to go get his head right and have asked the Harasa to dip his head in cold water 7 times. And so they did that. And then they argued about if they did it the right way or if they did it enough or if they did it, you know, enough to satisfy what Oyarsa wanted them to do. So they figured, well, let's just do it 7 more times just in case.
And then in that doing it 7 more times, it said that something fell off. And at first they thought it was its head, but then realized it wasn't. I didn't care, like, what fell off his head or what fell off?
Okay. So I was thinking about this. Like, I think it was probably, he must've had some kind of a hat, like a fur hat on. What is that called?
Like that cap, beanie.
No, not maybe, but more than that. I was imagining like what you would see someone in the north, you know, wearing like it's fur and maybe covers their ears. I don't, just lost the word of it. But more than just a beanie, you know, but kind of one of these things. It's like a helmet almost.
Fur. The ear flaps.
I was thinking maybe it was something like that, but maybe it was something more like a beanie shape, who knows, but something like that to keep him warm.
Okay.
Through the dunking of that eventually falls off. Actually, when I first read it, I was like, was this guy wearing like a toupee? And it just came right up. Is that what happened here? Like, it just soaked out the glue and it's just come right off his head.
Well, yeah, and then, but we know it definitely wasn't that because immediately after that, the description of his hair that has now grown, because just like his beard, his hair is now long, being in this planet for several months and not having been cut, is dripping wet and straightened, covering his face, and just he is red, he is mad, he is one that is like, you are trying to torture me and kill me, and I will not be broken, you will not break me. But all that's completely lost to the creatures of
he totally sees himself as a martyr.
Yeah,
like he totally sees himself as like, I am standing for all that is good and I will take it, you know, I am doing what's right. And so, yeah, no, he's probably really proud of himself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like you said, it's totally lost on them.
And so immediately we get into the heart of this chapter, which ultimately is dealing with a conversation between Weston and Oyarsa. Yes, Ransom is the translator throughout much of this chapter, but it's ultimately the conversation between these two. And in a greater sense, it's a conversation between humanity and Oyarsa and Melisandre.
Yeah, we're really getting into this back and forth here, and like you said, it's between Oyarsa and Weston, with Ransom doing the translation, which I really found interesting. So I don't know if you've ever found yourself, and you probably haven't, in this predicament where you've had to be the go-between between two different languages, but I remember when
my wife and I have.
Oh, okay. Let's hear about it.
Well, sorry to cut you off there. I didn't want to cut your story.
No. Go ahead.
We save those for Fridays. Cutting you off.
Uh-huh.
just, it's actually a really short story. So I took sign language all through high school and college, and I was at an airport once, and mm-hmm. there was a deaf woman who was trying to get her plane ticket and trying to get everything situated, and she was really struggling. And so there was the airline attendant trying to help her and couldn't sign. And so I kind of went over there and graciously said, you know, let me try and help translate and communicate here. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. End of the story.
And 10 minutes later, you were able to.
Yeah, thankfully it didn't take that long. It only took a couple of minutes, but.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So you were saying, you and your wife?
No, we were on our honeymoon, and we were in, where were we? I think we were in France at this moment in time. We were in Lourdes, actually. It was the Jubilee year for Our Lady of Lourdes. And we were at a laundromat that was also an internet cafe. Mm. So we were getting our laundry done and checking email at the same time.
Like you do.
And hey, that's what you do when in France. Anyway, you wash your underpants? I don't know. So the owner of the laundromat / internet cafe was French and spoke French. Mm-hmm. There was a lady there who was Portuguese, and there was another lady there that was I think maybe also French that could speak Spanish as well. Anyway, so the lady in Portuguese was having a hard time communicating with the person in French. And so she was – oh, this is what it was. She was talking to me in Portuguese. So I offered to help. So she's talking to me in Portuguese. I speak Spanish, which is close to Portuguese but not the same. Mm-hmm. And I'm picking up basically what she's saying, and I'm trying to communicate that then. I'm understanding it in Spanish, and I'm speaking it to Spanish to – I think it was this guy's wife who understood Spanish, who then spoke to him in French and in French for him to understand. Then he responds back in French. She speaks to me in Spanish, and I am at that point am useless because I don't speak Portuguese. But anyway, so it was this crazy scenario, and it was like, I don't know if I'm actually helping here. I think I am. Let me grab the words that I know in this language to then use it in this other language to kind of help the situation go forward. Like it's just like this awkward predicament that Ransom must be in, because while his mastery of the language, the Malacandran Hrasa language, is clearly much greater than that of Weston or Devine's,
absolutely,
it's still something that he's still, I mean, learning, mm-hmm. and doesn't have, you know, obviously he's much stronger in English. He doesn't have full capacity of it yet. And so to be able to translate to the detail and to capture the nuance of Weston's argument, it's a challenge. And so I did find it amusing and interesting how he was trying to break down different concepts that Weston was trying to articulate all throughout the chapter.
Let's kind of jump into that conversation. Basically, I enjoyed, and I don't know if this happened to you whenever you were trying to do all this translating, Gabe, but there's been many times when I've had to do meetings for a Spanish audience, Spanish speaking audience, and me being English speaking, I always have had an interpreter, and I've always had been very cautious of how much I say, because there's only so much that one can retain and speak and translate. And I love how Weston begins this conversation, and he's going, he's just like, I'm going to give whatever you want to call it, not a eulogy. It's almost a eulogy, because he thinks he's going to die. He thinks, okay, I'm a dead man, so I'm just going to lay it all bare here. And he just goes on and on and on, and then Ransom finally has to cut him off, and he's like, okay, hang on, wait. there's only so much I can translate here, so let me just stop you right here. And he tries to translate it. But the first thing he talks about is how, for Weston, his identity, he sees himself as the vanguard for the human race, that it is on his shoulders that he is called to carry on the human race and life itself of the human race. no matter whatever it takes, even if he has to die, he is going to carry this forward.
In whatever way, shape, or form that looks, right? Yes. Yeah, and one of the lines here, but I bear on my shoulders the destiny of the human race. I mean, just to underscore kind of what you're saying. And that's obviously very different from, and I know we're getting into the talk here between Oyarsa and Weston, but early on, Divine's trying to, you know, do his little thing. And you just see just there's such a stark contrast between the two. Divine is preoccupied with getting the pretty Sunbloods and saving his own skin and saying, hey, it's okay, we'll leave you alone, we just want Sunbloods, leave us, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's clear like he's only thinking about himself versus like you said, Weston thinking that he's part of this grander mission and feeling justified in that. And so he's got this monologue going on of his justification for all of his actions up to that moment. I did think it was interesting here, though, at the beginning of this, Oyarsa's talking to him saying that that the darkness has filled his mind with fear. And I think he's talking to Weston, actually. I mean, to Divine. Oh, okay. No, he's talking to Weston. And he's saying, yeah, you may have learned a lot of things, and clearly you've been able to make a ship that can cross across the heaven, but in all other things, you have the mind of an animal, that you're governed by fear, and that fear is guiding every one of your decisions. And it's because of that fear that you read into me wanting to meet with you, and here you are wanting to offer up ransom, and even the second time you were trying to offer him up to kill him to save yourself. So if you were mine, I would unbody you even now. But by my hand, Maladel does greater things than this, and says that he's not going to do that because it's not his, but animal. But let's go ahead and have this conversation. And that's where Divine's like, no, don't do that. And then they go on here where Weston is talking about the greater mission. But I just thought that was interesting how Yarsa is like setting the stage there right then and there. Like, you think you're smart, but you're not. You're actually little, and you're governed by fear, and it's affecting everything that you do. Can't you see that?
Weston reminds me of he actually reminds me of Thanos, but
yeah, I was thinking of that kind of
death and life, you know, just saying, Thanos's slogan was, you know, I am inevitable. And that's kind of how Weston, he's like, the human race is inevitable. Like the Matrix, whenever Mr. Smith sees humanity as a cancer, and we've heard that many times, but this is like Weston's thought process is like, we will hop from planet to planet. We will take over. We will consume. And once we're done with this, we'll move on to the next. And it's inevitable. That's right. We are going to go because we are smarter. We have armies, our civilizations. We have started as an amoeba, and then we have progressed and grown. And we are the superior race here. Like, yeah. There's nothing that you can do to stop this.
In some ways, I did think of Thanos, but it's not a perfect comparison.
Right. No.
There's
absolutely
some kind of character. And I was going to ask you this. Because I would know more than me. There's some kind of a character that like they consume planets. That's what they do. It's
It's, who is it? It's in the Marvel universe. It Galactus, I think.
Is it Galactica?
I think it's Galactus or Galactica. Because that's like the whole part of the Silver Surfer and the Fantastic Four and on. Yeah.
Okay. And so that's what I was thinking of. Like he is here's Weston, aka humanity, consumer of planets. Mm-hmm. And that's basically it. Yeah, jumping from one planet to the next, to use up, all about self-preservation. And I liked the point counterpoint that was going on between him and Oyarsa. I know we're probably going to jump around here because it was such a long
– It was.
This whole chapter was just this conversation. And so we'll probably jump around.
And like you said,
it's
difficult too because you have what Weston's saying, but then you have Ransom's interpretation of it, which it's the same but different. Like you said, it's not a perfect translation. So you kind of have to read both, but still getting the gist of it. So you're kind of speed reading through it. But one question I wanted to ask you, like you said, I was curious to know what you thought about whenever Oyarsa is going back at Weston's points when it comes to So when you say carry on the human race, do you mean the humanity part? Because the physical, because obviously your bodies and the humanity, you're going to change shapes. And but or is it the mind or is it the race? But it can't be the race because you're willing to kill Ransom over here. Like, what did you think of all that?
Yeah, and that's what I was going to bring up right now. I really like I loved the counterpoints that Oyarsa was bringing up. Like, okay, so what is it that you actually want to preserve? Is it just the way that humans look right now? Because you know, like you just said, you're going to evolve. It's going to be different. And Weston quickly acknowledges that and say, yeah, of course, whatever shape it looks, I know that. And then he's like, okay, so then is it the mind? Because if it's having like the soul body mind composite, then you know you would respect Alcha now because they're just like you in that sense. And the body shape is not what matters to you clearly. And he's like, no, it's all about humans. And he's like, okay, well, but then if it's about humans, then why were you willing to offer up Ransom as sacrifice? Like that doesn't make sense either. And you could see Weston getting frustrated by the holes being poked in his presentation here and his defense. And you know, he would say things, well, I don't have time to argue metaphysics with you, mm-hmm. or, you know, getting to the nuances of that. How, you know, if you can't see, you know, how what I mean by humanity, then that's, you know, that's on you, you know, kind of a thing, you know, which is classically just deferral, you know, refusing to answer the question. You know, it's clearly like he's being defeated in this argument and he doesn't want to acknowledge that. And then but right after that little back and forth, this is where Oyarsa, I think, goes on his soliloquy here about what has the evil one done to humans. Mm-hmm. And the acknowledgement here, the observation, I should say, that the evil one has taught them to break all the different laws, the basic laws of compassion, of love, of shame, of sympathy, of caring for one another, all of them except for the love of kindred. And even in that one, it's become bent and so focused that it's become, like he says, he calls it a little blind Oyarsa in your brain. Like it governs everything that you are doing. And you can see it clearly in Weston's argument. Like this is like the only thing that he's able to keep regurgitating over and over because it's become this little Oyarsa in his brain. Mm-hmm. He can't think of – he can give no other reasoning for why he's obeying it. Except for the fact that it's it.
What I loved what he says also in this area is how basically Weston is more dangerous than Divine. Because Weston is bent, but he's not broken. And it's, and he, you know, I love what he says. Basically, it's worse. It's far more evil to be bent than to be broken. And at first I'm like, what is he talking about here? But then he's like, yeah, I mean, when you're broken, you see the end result, which is Divine over here basically curled up in a fetal position on the ground. He's kneeling. He's got his head bowed down. He's broken. He realizes I'm here just for greed, man. I was just here for the money to get rich quick, whatever it takes. But there is something very, very wrong with you, Weston, because you are bent and you are unwilling to break in either way.
Yeah.
And that is because of the evil one on your planet has bent you.
I thought that line, though, about Divine was, I don't know, I guess shocking, where he said, so like you said, he's talking about how, a bent one can do more evil than a broken one, that because the broken one is nothing but an animal. And so if he were in my world, he would do no more evil than an animal. So like think like remember, there's the different creatures that they have around, and there's fish and there's, you know, the Hanakra and all this, but like he's just an animal, just like any of those other animals. And in that line right there, I was taken back to Introduction to the Devout Life and 2 weeks ago where we were making the choice and we were imagining hell and all the inhabitants mm-hmm. of hell mm-hmm. and to be like to imagine like what they were doing and what they looked like and how they were behaving. And especially how they were like a slave to their desires, a slave to their instincts, that they were basically animals. Like, there was no light of life in them, but rather just, you know, completely all the way broken, given down to their animalistic selves, right? And so, like, that's basically what Oyarz is talking about in regards to divine. Like he's basically animal. And this is the line that I thought was, like, shocking. If he were mine, I would unmake his body, for the Hanau in it is already dead. I was like, oh, man. Like, that's a huge indictment.
Absolutely. And on the flip side, too, you know, I saw that, but I also saw you see both, right? Because you see on the one side, like you said, they're already dead. But then you also see the understanding of, it's not that God puts us into hell, but we are the ones who choose hell. And you see that with Divine a little bit later on when he's shouting at Oryza, saying, me no care about Meladil. I like the bit one better. Me on his side. Like,
yeah,
he's owning it.
Whoa. I actually, you know that emoji where it's the face of the big eyes and the mouth open? Like, whoa. I actually drew that in my book at that part. I was like, this is crazy. I can't believe I'm actually reading this. Yeah, and the acknowledgement that, like, no, but you're worse because you're bent. This guy's an animal. He can't really do any more harm than what he's already done. He's basically dead. He's basically an animal. But you can still go do these horrible things. And talks about in the history, there's a drop the mic, kind of shuts him up moment. We'll go from this world to the next world. What about when Malachandra dies? We're actually older than your world. And closer to its death, then we'll go on to the next one. But then what about that one? Well, then we'll go to the next one, right? But then what about when all of them are dead? And then the next line is, Weston was silent.
Right. I mean, but he was silent, but he wasn't. So basically he's throwing a temper tantrum because he realized been defeated. And that's when he says the whole thing of, I don't care. I don't like Meladil. I don't like, you know, just being a
child. That's when he lashes out there. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is where Weston is saying, like, no, you're wrong. Look at you guys. You know, you're inept and you live in the Hundreds and you're soon all going to die. And Oyarza says, yeah, but you know what we left behind us in the Harandra? We left fear behind. And with fear, we left murder behind and we left rebellion behind. And the weakest of my people do not fear death. It's the bent one, the lord of your world, who wastes your lives and befouls them with flying from what you know will overtake you in the end. And I thought about that. Oh my gosh, the preoccupation of trying to run from death when we know it's inevitable. Like, humans are inevitable. Thanos is inevitable. No, death. Death is inevitable. And it's so amazing, the preoccupation and the fear that is motivated within us to try and do everything that we can to run from that, when Christ is the one that says, no, pick up your cross and follow me. Like, it's through that. It's not running from it. It's going through it. And then again, yes, that's where he does lash out and say, you know, me like bent one better, me on his side, you know, which is just so amazing. I could not believe I read that.
And we end this conversation with Oyarza basically saying, okay, I'm done with y'all. Y'all need to go back to your planet. Go back to Earth, Thelakandra. I need to talk to Ransom. And that's where Divine basically is petrified, is scared, and is begging Weston and Ransom to talk some, you know, like, we cannot go back right now. And we come to realize the reason why they can't go back is because it's been several months since they came to this planet. And as Weston goes on to explain to everyone, is that the planets are so far apart, they're now millions of miles further away from each other, not to mention that the path that we would have to take, the solar flares would be way too extreme for our bodies, for the ship to handle. We don't have enough oxygen, we don't have enough food and supplies. There's just no, like, there's a one in a million chance that we would make it alive back to our planet.
And even still, Oyarza says, I know you're saying it's a small chance, but small is not the same as none. So guess what you're going to do?
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he basically doubles down on him and just asks, okay, if you're able to do this, I know it's, you know, 1 in a million chance, but you're saying there's still a chance. So
what's the longest?
What's the minimum number of days you think it's going to take you? So Weston sits there and does the math.
No, maximum. What's the max? He's being generous here.
Oh, okay.
And he's saying, what's the most time you'll need? This is Oyarsa being generous here. Throw a number out and overdo it. You know, what's the most time you're going to need?
And Weston says 90 days.
That's right.
It'll take us 3 months to get back to Earth. And so Oriosa says, fine, then we will make it happen. We will give you air. We also have that art. That part, which we know they do based on previous chapters. We'll make sure that you have enough food and water and just make sure everything's ready for you. So that way you can leave and head back and reach the Lakandra.
But we don't want you coming back. And so you missed this part, but the thin one, that's what he calls divine, right? The thin one can fill you in on this. Maladel has taught me over the gap of time or of a gap of place to be able to basically unbody something, to disintegrate it, to make it into nothing. And so what they're doing, the Sorns and the Piffletriggs and the people who are working on that ship, they're setting it up to where at 90 days, the ship is gone. And if that means you're in space, then your death will be no bitterer because of it.
So we're flipping the role of Thanos here, and we're going to snap the finger, and you're going to turn into dust in 90 days. The ship will. So if you're on it, you're going to be snapped out of existence in 90 days.
There you go. And yes, I suppose that would then be the Thanos part of it. Absolutely. Yeah. And then he says too, so if you get to Earth, get out of the ship. Cause if you're in it, you're gone. So yeah. So
be gone. I need to talk to Ransom.
That's right.
End of chapter.
And that's where we end it. Jason, we only have 2 chapters left.
What?
Can you believe this?
I cannot.
This is crazy. So, Jason,
what's
going to happen in those 2 chapters?
I don't know what exactly he's going to tell Ransom, but I believe what I think it's going to be is his mission. His mission impossible, if you will. Ransom's going to turn into Tom Cruise now. He's going to be part of MI6. Or MIF, Mission Impossible. What was the name of the Mission Impossible organization? I don't know if you've seen all the movies.
Yeah, is it MIF? Mission Impossible Force?
Yeah, that sounds right. So he's going to turn Tom Cruise and be part of MIF, and Oreos is going to give him a mission, whether he chooses to accept it or not. And and then basically I predict that his mission will, you need to go back to Thalcondra. I don't know what exactly to do. Maybe it's to confront the evil one back on Earth. He's like, you know, now that you can see, now that your eyes have been opened to this world and to understand what's happening, that you can see Eldil and see me and hear me, you know, now you're going to be able to go back to Earth or Thalcondra and start seeing other things that the bent, because everyone's bent here on Earth, they can't see or hear what's happening on that planet, but now you can.
You've got new eyes now.
So I need you to go back and fix this. And I can see Ransom being like, I don't know, fighting it back and forth. But in the end, at the end of this book, he's going to be like, okay, I'll go back. So that's my prediction.
Well, we've only got 2 more chapters, which means we've only got 2 more weeks. Can you believe that?
What a journey it's been. From the hill country, being on holiday, being on a walkabout, to finally now on Melikandra.
To getting on a ship.
What a
landing
ride.
Landing on a foreign planet, drinking effervescent water. Oh my gosh, what an adventure.
It's been good. Can't wait to continue it with you listeners. let us know what you guys think. Let us know what your thoughts are on this chapter and on this book. Best way to do that is going to readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm. Also, share this with everyone. Just tell everyone, hey, you should check out Reading Your Way to Heaven. It's on every podcast provider, player. Just look for it. Do a search, Reading Your Way to Heaven. You'll find it. Hit subscribe. Download these episodes. Join us in the conversation. We guys. That's not a word. Guys, we love you.
Actually, they are words, just not
in the proper sentence, in the proper place.
We love you guys.
I'm tired. I'm going to bed.
We'll see you next week for chapter 21, unless we see you later on in the week, which we'd love to have you join us there too. So, Jason, go to bed. We'll see you later. Take care, guys. Love you. Bye.
We bye love.